Welcome to the Reynolds Hot Box, a podcast about local media and the future of media from the Reynolds Media Lab. I'm your host, Lucia Starbuck. With me today are two people from Colo 8, a local TV news station. Co-hosting with me is Jordan Griffin, a weekend editor, and we are here with Ben Deitch. He's a reporter and weekend anchor. We'll listen to some of his clips now.
Colo 8 News Now's Ben Deitch shows us the important role Facebook played in his rescue.
You generally hear about people making the trip to the Black Rock Desert in the summer for Burning Man. But one man found out the hard way about what can happen when you drive out there this time of the year.
Crews are installing a protective netting at Greater Nevada Field.
Colo 8 News Now's Ben Deitch shows us what inspired this change.
That one went sizzling off into the...
It was on May 29th at Minute Maid Park in Houston when one of the most glaring incidents took place.
It hit a young child.
A line drive off the bat of the Cubs' Albert Almora, hitting a two-year-old girl in the head. That girl suffering a skull fracture. Obviously, that is far from the only incident. You'll see a long list in just the last year alone, which is why most teams are making this change.
Colo 8 News Now's Ben Deitch is live with three important things drivers should keep in mind.
In Washoe County, it has been an ongoing problem, with 25 students being hit by cars since August. In Carson City, that hasn't been the case, and the district hopes to keep it that way.
Ben, thank you for joining us. Will you tell us a little bit about your role at Colo 8 and what you do?
Lucia, I am the weekend anchor at Colo 8. Been there for, how long have I been there now, Jordan?
About like 3 years, right?
Oh, I'm going to say it's more than that.
Oh.
I'm going to say it's closer to four, but I started out at Colo as a reporter, the morning show reporter, which if you hate sleep is a great job for you. You start as the morning reporter at 3 a.m.,
And do you hate sleep yourself?
No, I love sleep, so that was a bad job for me. But at the time, I had a great crew, and that was the reason why I kept doing it. Great crew on the morning show. It was a friend of mine, Dave Lawrence, who was the morning anchor at the time, who told me about the job, and I applied for it, and I was able to get it after being a producer at Channel 4, which I couldn't have been happier to leave, by the way. Producing at 4, that was a nightmare, but it was because I didn't know anything. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing at that point, and I was thrown right into the fire, and after a rough year and a half there, I transitioned over to Channel 8, and yeah, been about 4 years or so now.
Wow, and you said you were thrown into the fire. What is that? What happened?
I kind of made it seem like I knew more than I did when I was hired. So the reality was I had taken classes in this building, but that was 2004 to 2006. I mean, it was a long time ago, and this is 2014 when I got laid off from radio, as so many other radio personalities here did. And I wanted to make the jump to TV, but I didn't have any experience at that point. And I tried to make it sound like I kind of did, at least know what I was doing, even though I didn't. So I just jumped in and started co-producing morning show newscasts. At that point, my shift was 2 to 7 a.m.
Oh my gosh!
For $10 an hour. Which obviously is terrible, but I did it because I wanted to try to make something of my career still after the lowest point of my life. It is what it is, and now I'm glad it happened, because even though I still miss my old show, I like how you become a more well-rounded person working in TV. And I was so all in on sports before, and now, you know, now I cover everything from fires to court cases to stories about kids, whatever it is. And this is stuff I never thought I'd see myself doing, but now that I've been doing it, I just feel like I know so much more about how the world works. So I'd highly recommend that, as opposed to just being kind of a one-track mind type person.
Of course. And how did you decide to go from radio to TV?
I can't hide the fact that part of it was a lack of other options, but I had always liked the idea of doing TV, even when I was in radio. I liked the idea of obviously anchoring, but the idea of going around doing different stories, covering actual breaking news, I did like. Now, when I went into TV initially, I did think, well, I'm going to do sports. I mean, that's all I'm going to be able to do. I mean, what else can I do? I mean, I've been doing sports talk radio and sports play-by-play for 9-10 years. I'm obviously going to be doing sports here. Well, after 2 weeks, I decided, no, I'm good. No, I'd rather do anchoring. I'd rather do full-time news and see how that goes, because there's several reasons for that, but primarily I wanted to learn everything else. You know, I wanted to learn the stuff that I didn't already know and see where that took me. And I never would have thought that, I almost never would have thought that I would have the success that I did have in the time I did. And partially that's because in order to get an anchor job, whether it's the weekend anchor job or a full-time anchor job, which I'm still hoping to someday get, you have to have people quit. I mean, they don't fire anyone in news, which is a good thing, or maybe it could be considered a bad thing in some cases, but they basically never fire anyone. So you have to wait till a job opens up to get it. And that's the good thing. If you want to hang on to that job, you can. You know, there's a lot of downsides to the job in terms of how much money you get paid, but it does have a degree of security to it, because I think there's always going to be a need to show people what's going on locally in the news, even as TV and media change.
Of course, I always agree local media is very important. How did, like, covering sports and doing radio, how did that prepare you for what you do now?
It definitely helped. I mean, some new reporters seem to understand the story well, but when it comes to actually knocking it out, voicing a package, or just being on air, having that presence, they can struggle with that. And that was the one carryover that I was able to take, was just comfortability on air and knowing how to, at least in my own mind, maybe others would disagree, knowing how to speak into a microphone relatively well. I guess it did help, but no one ever seemed to think, at least the people that had been in news for a while, I never got the vibe from them that they respected my experience at all. They just looked at me as someone who was new to news, and the fact that I started at 30 as opposed to starting at 20, which would be much easier, they didn't view me as any different, which made it tough at first. But it also enabled me to kind of grind through it in terms of not making much money, because I'd already made money doing other things, that I was able to kind of put up with the lack of pay, put up with the lack of hours, and knowing that I could just kind of bide my time. And I assumed good things would happen, which fortunately for me, they did.
But do you think those, like, helped you as you kept moving with your career?
I think it did. Yeah. I think being put down all those times, being insulted, and when you know people are insulting you behind your back, which is, by the way, a common thing in news. There's gossip, way more gossip than I wish there was, and
yeah,
I can't stand it.
Yeah, people are very competitive.
Oh, it's just drives me crazy, the gossip. But it's the reality. So, you know, you try to stay on the right side of it if you can and try to avoid doing it yourself. But, yeah, you know, it's I always had a pretty good awareness for how I was perceived by others. And now I feel like the people who just start in news, like the young people coming out of college, they're the ones that always seem to respect me. Whereas the people who've been around for a while, it's not as much. But the longer you do it, the more they respect you. It's not like you got to put in your time type thing. And that was a something that happened to me when I did start, was in 2016. There was I saw an opportunity to advance in terms of getting anchor reps in at Channel 8. There's a 4:30 a.m. newscast, which nobody watches, obviously. 4:30 in the morning, who would watch? Before the 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. show, which is the main show. And I was a reporter on the 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. show doing live reporting. And other times, reporters had filled in anchoring that 4:30 a.m. show. And I said, well, why can't I do that? You know, I'd only been around for a few months, but I'm like, well, let me do that. No one ever, the anchors that do this show don't want to anchor it. So let me go ahead and fill in. So I was able to talk my way into doing that. After only doing three shows, word reached my general manager that I had done it, and he then said, you're not allowed to anchor anymore. He didn't even see me do a show. He didn't say I was bad. He just said, you're not allowed to do it because you haven't put in your time yet. You know, you always want to advance, but you can't just show up and assume that you're going to get airtime or a better job or whatever the case is. Sometimes you just have to grind through the monotony, you know, just trudge through the drudgery of the early portions of your career, which, Jordan, I know you've done very well. I mean, just taking the weekend editor job is a way to do that, to start out.
Aww.
Taking whatever job you can get, putting up with it, the lack of pay, and just doing it and doing it well. So that's exactly what I'd recommend to anyone else that would consider doing it.
Well, thank you, Ben.
Yeah, well, you guys are kind of talking about these barriers you face. Does it affect your mental health at all? And how do you kind of, like, how do you find the way to keep moving forward?
Well, I mean, like I said before, with the time at Channel 4, it did, to a degree, affect it with dealing with the criticism as a producer over there. But at this point, like I said, if I quit tomorrow, I'd be incredibly happy that I made the decision to do it because of the experience that I was able to gain. And I'm not planning on quitting tomorrow, but if I did, and it's been astonishing to me how many people have. So there's always going to be turnover and all, and there's always going to be opportunities. But yeah, to get through, mentally, to get through those first, particularly the first few months, there's nothing harder than the first couple of weeks. I mean, that to me was the hardest part. Just my first day of producing it, oh God, I wanted to kill myself. Oh, it's brutal. Just the mental overload, just trying to process so much information. I'm sure it was the same, right, Jordan? When you edited your first show, what was that day like?
I remember the first day that I walked into Colo, I was kind of just like nerve-wracked, like seeing the script and the show and like all the different programs that you have to learn to edit. And I was like, this is too much responsibility. Like, I'm only 18. I don't know if I can do this. And like, I still feel like that when I edit like the normal weekday shows too. But I've just come to learn that, I've learned how to use the programs, and everyone was telling me that it was pretty easy. And I think just the hardest part about my job is just showing up. Cause like now I've kind of mastered, I don't want to be too cocky, but I've figured out how to edit and like the time management. And so now it's just like showing up on my Saturdays and Sundays, but it's really not that bad anymore just because I kind of have made my schedule work around it. And all of my roommates now and everyone that I'm going to school with works on the weekends. So it kind of just is helping me grow and see like the reality of news and just kind of what I'm getting myself into. And I'm kind of cursed because all these people tell me that, oh, you're going to make no money. And the future of news is very uncertain, but I still want to do it, so.
Well, it's not like there's too many things that right out of college you'll say, oh, you're going to be rich doing this, so go ahead and start there. I mean, yeah, you pretty much don't make any money no matter where you start.
And now we're moving to our claim to fame segment. Ben, what do you think was your biggest claim to fame?
Claims to fame, I mean, there's been certainly some stories at Colo that stand out. I mean, when I covered O.J. Simpson getting paroled from Lovelock, that stood out, going out there and actually being there with a throng of media, with CNN on my left and Fox News on my right. Wow. And other big-time markets there as well. That was cool. That one definitely stands out. I don't know. What else, Jordan? What else have I told you about that I should point out here?
There was like a time when you told me there was a fire.
Hey everyone, Ben Deitch from Colo 8 here, checking in inside of a tree right now up here at South Lake Tahoe, where we are covering the Emerald Fire. This fire broke out about 1:30 this morning, and it's continued to burn ever since. We are alongside State Route 89, which has been closed down in both directions except for emergency vehicles. We had the chance to get in here, and this fire continues to burn, as you see right in front of us here.
Oh, the Emerald Fire. Yeah, that's a good one, because that was October 14th of 2016, which is a day where you'll never forget if you're in Washoe Valley or South Lake Tahoe. You had the Little Valley Fire and the Emerald Fire. You had 80-mile-an-hour winds that day, so any spark was going to create a big fire. It was 3 in the morning when I drove from Reno to South Lake Tahoe. While I did that, I actually passed the Little Valley Fire. I could see it, this orange glaze in the middle of the night burning up on top of the hills to the right of Washoe Valley. And that wasn't even the fire I was going to. And I had to kind of, and I was like, well, I've been assigned to go to the Emerald Fire, which is another hour away in South Lake Tahoe. But the Little Valley Fire ended up obviously being the more memorable of the two fires, but they were both memorable in the sense that they both caused a ton of damage that day. And it was the only day that I ever remember working at Colo where we preempted Good Morning America, which I didn't even know you could do, but apparently we can if it's a big enough news day.
What does that mean exactly?
You go wall-to-wall local coverage. So the show normally ends at 7 a.m., and there's just a couple of cut-ins on Good Morning America, which are like two-minute segments of local news in the middle of Good Morning America. So we just said, no, we're just going to stay live with local news the entire time during Good Morning America. And I must have ended up doing 12 or 13 reporter hits that day. Usually only do two. In this case, I did like constant hits. And I do kind of wish that I could travel back in time and do that over again, because I was not nearly as good of a reporter then as I feel like I am now. And when I watch the video of it, I cringe. So that's
okay.
Proves
it shows
my point.
Growth. Yeah.
So, it was one of these huge days, but it's memorable because you don't get many of those. Like, that's what you always want when you're in news. Like, you always kind of think about how cool it would be to actually have a big news story. And while there have been a number of them in this town, I sure haven't covered many of them. So you always wonder what's coming because you never know when it is going to happen.
Once again, this is the Reynolds Hot Box, a podcast about local media and the future of media from the Reynolds Media Lab. I'm your host, Lucia Starbuck. With me is Jordan and Ben. And Ben, we are just talking about things you've covered and in sports. And also, you do like some of your own independent work. You have a vlog. Will you tell us about that?
Basically, what ended up happening was I noticed in late 2016 that a number of poker players, and only a couple of them actually at that point, had started doing these vlogs, which are them showing a little bit about their daily life, mainly them showing about how they played particular hands. It's a combination of lifestyle and strategy. And when I first saw it, I said, well, this is good for me because I have played poker as a side job now for over 10 years. But the vlogging thing was really, when I looked at it, a combination of the two things I know how to do. It's play poker and shoot video. Like, wow, this is perfect for me.
Vlog 54. Checking in from Colo 8 News Now. For those that don't know, I'm the weekend anchor here. After the most profitable Vegas trip I ever had, I immediately came back to Reno and lost about 600 of that profit back, but followed that up with three consecutive wins after and looked to add on to it in an early morning game at Peppermill.
So I started doing it, and I didn't know if anyone would watch. Sure enough, people did. And I think that's because YouTube's algorithm perfectly knows what videos to show next to other people's videos. So there's these other vloggers, and I just kind of piggybacked on them. Like, the YouTube put my vlogs on the right, showing recommended for you, Ben Dietsch poker vlog, and some started watching it. And while I wish I was at a higher amount of subscribers than I am, I'm still near 10,000, which is good. But if you're willing to put in that time, it can pay off. And I just did a lecture to a journalism class here at the university talking about this, and it's very important to know if you're going to go into YouTube, it's not the hardest thing. I mean, anyone can do it. That's what's so cool about it. But you have to have a very specific audience in mind. Like, you know, if you are doing a podcast that says, okay, I'm here to show about making coffee, and I'm going to show you how to make a latte and a decaf and a mocha and a frappuccino. And so you have to specifically target the audience of coffee makers out there on YouTube and have titles that are very specific to them. You know, instead of just saying, tasty frappuccino, video number 6, you have to say the one ingredient that has taken my frappuccino to the next level. You have to have these clickbaity titles. And I didn't, and when I started doing this, I didn't even realize that. But then once I looked at the numbers, and if you go to my channel, you'll find vlog number 4. There's been like 60 of them now, but vlog 4 is still the most viewed vlog that I've done.
Well, now we get to the hand that I will never forget anytime soon. A place like here in Reno, you're constantly playing against the same guys. I think a lot of you are probably in that same boat, but and a lot of the times it's the same few guys in which you make a lot of your money from. Well, I got into a hand with one of those guys today. He made it $25 early position. I'm on his immediate left with ace king of hearts, and I make it 75. Folds around to him, and I'm expecting to call with everything that he raised with in that spot, so he does. And the flop comes out ace jack 9, 2 hearts. So I have a pair of aces and the nut flush draw. Obviously a massive flop for me, but then something really unexpected happens. He shoves all in. And the title is the reason why. It's a $2,500 bet into a $150 pot.
Wow.
And
any poker player that sees that says, okay, that is the most ridiculous freaking thing I've ever heard of. I have to know why someone would make that bet. And so they all click on it. And that's the key thing. You got to find your audience. Be very, don't try to bring in people from a wider audience. Focus on getting everyone in your specific audience interested, because that's the only hope you have. You know, you're never going to get everyone on board, but if you can get people that you're specifically targeting on board, then more will come on board.
Yeah, I like that. And Jordan, you're a videographer too. Will you tell us a little about your experience and what you like to do?
I would honestly, after like working with Ben for almost a year, I kind of do want to start YouTube. And I always say I am, and then he always gets on me because I never do anything.
Well, you did, though.
I'd made one vlog.
Yeah, you made one vlog, and it was good.
Yeah, it was okay. But then, like, the thing was it was at one of the bars here in Reno, and everyone that was in it was underage. So I was like, I don't know if I should get everyone in trouble.
There's no police. Police aren't going to YouTube and looking for underage people going to bars.
That's what I was thinking. And then I was like, this might bite me in the ass, like, in the future. Yeah. So I was like, I'm just going to put on private. It was fun to make. I had fun. But I also edit the videos at Colo, and I think that has given me kind of just an idea of what it's like to be a reporter. And in school, I can incorporate all the things that I learned from Colo into my work here.
The ability to see into the future is capable of anyone. Come discover with me as I sit down with local psychics to figure out how you can tap into your third eye.
I don't feel like I haven't done enough, and I haven't done a lot, but I don't know. I'm just going to play the card and say I'm still young.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. That's what you got going. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's what I would say. I mean, if you can start doing this when you're 18, 19, 20, that is huge.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's crazy.
You don't want to start when you're 30. Trust me, I did it. You don't want to do it.
It's crazy how much money people can make on YouTube for just showing their lives. And just like, and also the thing about like making packages with reporting, when I watch YouTube videos now, I'm like, oh my God, they're using B-roll, and they're doing like the clickbait is kind of like your headline in an article. And so like everything that we learn in the journalism school here, it's, you can incorporate it into YouTube and make your videos a lot better. Cause a lot of people on YouTube, they still get a lot of clicks cause their content is interesting. Like I follow this girl who's a stripper and she does vlogs. Her name is Christina.
Good morning, guys, and welcome back to my YouTube channel. So in today's video, it's going to be another day in my life video. So if you guys want to come with me to run all my errands and then come with me to work, then keep watching.
And she uses her iPhone, and like she doesn't know what she's doing, but she gets so many views because she's a stripper. But like if you just make your videos better and you do the same content, then people are probably going to watch that more.
How much can she show in those videos?
She can't show a lot. It's kind of more like her counting her money, which it just makes me think, like, why am I here? But then, like...
But she can't show, like, her dancing and stuff
No,
on
she, like, she'll, like, take, like, pictures or whatever, like, in the dressing room with her friends. And that's kind of it. But she can't, like, record her, like, actually stripping.
Oh, well, that's where the
But it's like a day in the, it's like a day in the life of, like, her before getting her Botox and, like, getting her makeup on. And then, like, then she, like, cuts out the stripping part. And then it's her driving home. And then her counting her money.
Day in the life thing is fascinating. It is. There's just something about it. When people can do a proper day in the life vlog, there's just something fun to watch about it. And I've never been good at it.
So you guys think, like, not only if you're a reporter and anchor, you should also be on YouTube and make your own videos about your own life? You guys find importance in that?
Well, why not? I mean, it's such an easy thing to do. And anyone can do it. It's just a matter of, do you want to put in that extra work to do it? And it's just a... You obviously make your own hours when you do it. You choose when you want to work or what you want to do. You're your own boss, really. YouTube is a true meritocracy, which is cool. Unfortunately, it doesn't pay much. You got to really get a lot of views to make anything. But
neither does reporting, though.
Neither does reporting, though. Yes, that is true. So,
and then you also know like all of the skills that you have to use for YouTube. You know all of it, and you're good on camera. And I don't know, it's just kind of like a different,
yeah,
it's
you
like
do,
a side
you,
hustle, I guess.
You do, Jordy. When are you going to start being more on camera? This is Jordan's thing, by the way. I tried to get her to do some on-camera stand-ups, and she freaks out with no teleprompter. I can't get her to do on-camera stuff without a prompter.
My thing is I just get super nervous. And like Ben was saying before, how people are very judgmental in the news industry. I just hate being judged. And then I think about, and then I judge myself when I'm doing it. And I'm like, why am I even doing this? Like, I'm still a student, blah, blah, blah. And so it's just like, I kind of get in my own head. That's what it is. And like, people at Colo are kind of scary. Like, I don't want to step on anyone's toes. I just want to stay in my lane. I need to practice more.
Ben, you want Jordan to be more in front of the camera. But what are some tips for getting over that nervousness, like that it can be so scary, I assume.
Well, I do hate doing it, but you have to watch yourself.
No.
That's the worst.
It is.
I look at myself and I'm like, oh my God, did I actually like look like that? I know. Like, who let me out of the house?
I get it. It's rough. But when I watch myself now, I don't think it's that bad. But when I watch myself in 2016, it's like, oh my God, I'm terrible. So and the hardest part to me, what I do with my hands. I always wondered about that. Some people always want to be moving their hands when they talk. That's not me. So
that's me. Because like, I remember in high school, I did this like speech and political debate thing, and like my teacher literally taught us to like emphasize words, like use your hands, and so now I'm just like stuck in that and it looks weird on camera and I need to stop doing it. So like, yeah, that's why I like
anchoring too, because I always have my left hand on the teleprompter and my right hand I just kind of stick on the desk. But when you're reporting in the field, you kind of have to figure something out. If you're on a stick mic, obviously you're holding the mic with one hand, and your other hand you have to occasionally make some sort of a gesture with, but it's kind of awkward at first. And there's, you know, like your posture on air or whatever the case is, little things at first you got to get over. And obviously not having a teleprompter, you have to memorize the first part of what you're going to say. But once you just get into the head, and it's easier having produced before because you know exactly what's coming. You know that you're going to jump on and you're going to look at the camera and you're going to talk for like 10 seconds. Well, we're here on the corner of 4th Street and Virginia, where a fire has just ignited the Silver Legacy. Now, take a look at this video. You know, once you say that, all of a sudden, you know, you're into VO. And you're off camera. So you look down at your phone and you can then go into a script. And sometimes you don't have a script. Sometimes you're still ad-libbing at that point. But the more of a script you can have, the smoother your hits are going to be. And you can essentially go into like a robotic mode once you've said that first on-camera portion, which is very short. Then you read your script. And then you go back on camera for the last 10 seconds of the hit, and you just say, and back at her live, as you can see, crews are still surveying the damage, and it looks like they're going to be doing so throughout the entirety of the night. On East 4th Street, Ben Deitch, Colowade News Now. So you just have like that last tag that you throw in there, and the first part, but once you get it, once you can do those, you know, the rest of it becomes really easy. So this is what I'm trying to, or at least I did try, to help with Jordan on, and I'm convinced that she will do it because she's such a good editor, and she's already figured out that part of it, that this part will be easy.
Yeah, I like that. And Ben, how was your time in the Reynolds Hot Box today?
Oh, I mean, I'm down to hot box anytime, you know? It's,
do you know the slang term of hot box?
I might. I think I kind of see where you're going here, but... obviously, this title was chosen, so I'm going with it.
Yeah, I didn't think about it until you just said that. And I was like, oh my gosh, not like two meanings.
It's not like you to not think of something like that. Usually, you're on top of these things.
Yeah.
We are the Reynolds Hotbox, a podcast about local media and the future of media from the Reynolds Media Lab.